How do we work with a willful client without triggering even greater resistance? Dr. Marsha Linehan has developed some useful ways to handle these types of situations. But as Marsha warns, it requires a measured approach, or it can quickly make a bad situation worse.
Oh, I had this wonderful client. She used to come put her feet up in skills group on the table. And she would come in and say she was not going to do a thing. And I always said to her, listen now, I just tell me something. I take it you're being willful today, right? I said, are you feeling willful today? She said, yes, I am. I said, well, how long are you planning on being willful? I said, because I'm willing to wait you out. I said, but, you know, sooner or later, you're going to have to give up being so willful. Well, I'm not doing it now. I said, well, all right. Well, let me know. How about in 10 minutes? What do you think? And then I often take a willful person, that particular person I'd take and have her sit next to me. And I always say, come on, sit over here next to me. This was in skills group. And then I put my hand on her, and she got angry or said she didn't want to do something. I said, oh, come on. You know, it's sort of that, like, good old boy kind of approach. And, oh, come on, I know you can do it. It's not going to be so terrible. Just sit here next to me. And so in many ways, you have to, it's like working with a two-year-old. I got a three-year-old granddaughter right now. And, you know, when she starts screaming, yelling, and crying, all you can do is just sort of, you know, kind of keep soothing until you get her mobilized again to do whatever she has to do or doesn't want to do. So it's not that much different than that. The key is that you've got to have a reason for the behavior you want them to change. You know, and I've had people do all sorts of things. I had another person who used to come in and clean her purse out every time she came to group therapy. She would walk in with her purse and then open it up like that, and out everything would go. And then she was a scientist, no less. She used to read science papers while she's waiting for group to start. Soon as group started, she'd open her purse up and let everything drop down. So what I did with her is I treated her like she wasn't doing any of that. I treated her like she was just part of the group and rolling along. Because often fighting with somebody makes it worse than ignoring it. And so willfulness, often you just sort of ignore. And you assume that they're going to do what you want them to do sooner or later. You tell them you're waiting around on them.
What happened to the scientist?
She did well. She did well. I just let her clean her purse out. You know, there are other people who knit. I mean, people do all sorts of things that they, you know, they get too anxious, so they have to have a number of things to do. And you know, once you start having these big rules and things like that, then things don't go too well. You know, you have to let people stand up, walk around the room, do things like that. So the trick to willfulness is to not be willful yourself. But that's your natural inclination, is to be willful for them. Now, the other thing, you know, I've had clients who wouldn't come to group. And I simply did contingency management and said, if you don't go to group, missing groups is missing this therapy. So if you don't go to group, then I'm not going to see you for your individual session. So I've done a lot of also, not a lot, but I've done a fair amount of contingency management on behavior when I know that the client wants something from me. But that you have to be ultra careful about also. But I've certainly done it with clients.
What did you mean you have to be ultra careful about?
Well, what you don't want to do is start punishing clients for behavior that's the very behavior that brought them into therapy. So in other words, DBT doesn't let people kick people out of therapy because they're engaging in behaviors that brought them in the first place. Okay. So if a client throws things, does stuff like that, you know, we'll wait until we talk about anger when we can get to some of those things. But on the other hand, I've had clients where I say, you know, this behavior is problematic and this is the consequence for the behavior with me. When you do that, I'm going to do this. And so, but you have to be careful in doing that because it's easy to get vindictive and start punishing rather than doing sort of a straight contingency management strategy.
There's a fine line between contingency management and punishment. Here, Dr. Ron Siegel and Dr. Kelly McGonigal offer their thoughts on Marsha's points.
Now, there's a very classic psychoanalytic paper, which everybody trained in psychodynamic psychotherapy in the Boston area still reads and read decades ago when I was training. It's a paper by an analyst named John Malzberger called Countertransference Hate in the Treatment of Suicidal Patients. And his main hypothesis is, if we're hateful toward our patient, and because they've been carrying on or doing things that are difficult for us, and if we're trying to even contingently reinforce behavior because we're mad at them, they're going to pick that up, and things are going to go poorly because they're going to pick that up. So if, as a therapist, we are setting a contingency, and there are times to do that, you know, where if somebody's acting in ways that aren't going to work for the session, including maybe threatening us physically or not showing up or the like, I think the key is to know our own aggression here. If it's coming out of anger, it's probably going to be counterproductive. If it's coming out of care, like a parent on a good day, then it probably will be helpful. And here I think our own mindfulness practice can be enormously useful because we tend to notice where things are coming from. And if it's our self-esteem being threatened, or we're anxious that we're going to get in trouble if the patient acts up in a certain way, or we're going to feel insulted by their behavior and it's coming out of that, that's not going to work so well. You know, it reminds me when I worked in a child community mental health clinic for years, that almost all of the acts of abuse on the part of the parents, physical abuse anyway, came from the parents' own sense of humiliation. You know, they just couldn't bear that sense of humiliation. And I think therapeutic abuse is similar, that when we set limits in a way that's harmful, it's because we can't, there's some humiliation happening to us as a therapist and we have difficulty with it. So my overarching thought is, you know, she's making a very good point, and therapists, know thyself.
When contingency management has been effective in group therapy or one-on-one therapy, it's almost always a combination of positive social reinforcement and tangible reinforcement, like contingency management in addiction, where people can receive money or other things that they value as a result of staying sober or taking other positive steps. So I kind of just wanted to bring that forward because, you know, Marcia's right that punishing someone for doing something you don't want them to do almost never works, almost always backfires. I think the research is very clear on that. And the other thing I wanted to mention is, when you're thinking about this from a practitioner point of view, from the addiction literature, we know one reason that this doesn't work so well is because there's always competing positive reinforcement for behavior in the individual's social environment. And in addiction, one is always thinking, okay, what is the positive reinforcement in their environment that I'm competing with because I'm trying to get them to do something else? And if you're a therapist and you think that your disapproval or rejection of your client is going to be more powerful than the approval or disapproval of people in their lives that they care about, their community, you know, I think you might lose that one. That if you are thinking that you're going to sort of manipulate someone based on your own approval, you might not be the most important person in that client's life. So I would definitely encourage people to think more towards the positive social reinforcement and other types of positive reinforcement as a learning tool.
What's clear here is that there are several ways of approaching a client's resistance, but there are certain traps that we'd be wise to avoid.